Oh, hey. My name is Evan. Evan Damerow. Welcome to Locked On Cavs, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. Won't you hold on a moment while I continue co-hosting the number one Cleveland Cavaliers podcast? Cool, thanks. I suppose you're wondering why my co-host Chris Manning and I summoned you here today. It's not just to remind you that we're the number one Cavaliers podcast, although I would like to emphasize that that is 100% true. No, it's to tell you something much more important. This is Friday's episode of Locked On Cavs, and on today's episode, Chris and I recap Cavs-Wizards, and then draft expert Trevor Magnotti joins the show to discuss his thoughts on the Cavs rookies and who they should target this summer. If you could, give Trevor a follow on Twitter at Illegal Screens, and check out his 2020 NBA Draft Big Board, version 3.0 on Fear the Sword right now. We'll include a link to it in the description below. And thanks again for listening. I hope you're all doing well. The lack of sunlight can lead to seasonal depression, and my DMs are always open if you need someone to talk to. That wasn't a joke, I'm being genuine. But, without further ado, sit back, strap in, grab a cold beer if you're of age, or a cold Capri Sun if you aren't, and enjoy. 3, 2, 1, let's do this thing.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Chris, the Cavs dropped a... you know, kind of a disappointing game. Washington was coming off the second of a back-to-back, and they played in overtime.
They played in overtime the night before. Incredible.
Yeah, truly was. You and I kind of touched on this yesterday, but Bradley Beal was by and far the best player for Washington tonight with 36 points, 8 assists, 2 rebounds, 4 of 8 from 3. Clearly is an all-star, and we'll get in with the coach's vote. To round things out, Isaiah Thomas had 13 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, and a nice little revenge game in 22 minutes. But shout out to Davis Bertans. He finished with 17 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. And I tweeted this during the game, but I firmly believe that he's going to be a trade candidate for Washington, and he's going to get the Wizards something pretty nice leading up to the deadline. And I think whatever team ends up with him, shout out to friend of the pod and recent guest Ty Windish. He hopes it's the Bucks. Yeah, I think whoever ends up with Bertans post-deadline is going to be pretty darn happy with what they get. And now let's...
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Let's touch base on the Wizards before we talk about the Cavs.
I just want to say, Jordan Zerm tweeted this, and I'm just going to quote him. Shouts to Zerm. Boy, the Cavs are fat. That's how I feel. That's how I feel about this. This is a game that, as we talked about, I feel like they should. This is like a schedule win, and you can like. There are certain aspects of this that, like, I think you attribute it to, like, you know, Garland looks like he's clearly like a little fatigued, kind of has hit a wall of some kind. You know, this is a thin bench right now. You know, like, I know you got a really good game out of Nance. You know, McKinney playing with energy certainly helps, but Dele plays 6 minutes and is really giving you nothing. Exum, I think, still did some stuff I liked, had a good backup, but it's still kind of, I think, figuring some out a little bit, not really making a ton of impact. So, and your starters are all playing heavy minutes, except for Tristan Thompson, who only played 21 minutes. You know, it's just like, I think this is kind of a team that needs some bodies, and is a little worn out right now, and they're not really going to get an extended break. I mean, they play again on Saturday. I don't know what their schedule looks like off the top of my head next week, but like this is, I think more than anything, this is just a group that looks like a little, like is just a little worn right now. The Wizards somehow, it's kind of insane that the Wizards, you know, had more energy considering they played an overtime game in another state the previous night. But look, if you look at how many, the way they kind of took this, they had no one played more than 29 minutes for them, and they had a bunch of guys off the bench playing the 20s, and like that, maybe that just mattered to some degree. You know, like I wonder if that is just like one of the things that just kind of loses the cap of this game. I wonder if that you can, that it's as simple as that.
No, I would agree with you 100% in that regard. It's just the Cavs looked flat. We touched on this as well. Maybe the game against the Knicks, we were kind of hesitant to say, like, maybe the reality of the situation started to sink in for Cleveland, and we should use this Washington game as a bit of a better barometer once they had a few days to rest up. And no, this game against the Wizards felt pretty damn similar to the game against the Knicks, where it seemed like coming into it, it seemed like a winnable game for Cleveland. And then, yeah, no, they just, the Cavs aren't a very good team. I mean, you get a good night from Kevin Love, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals on 8 and 19 shooting, 3 of 9 from the arc. Darius Garland, like you said, is starting to look like he's hitting a rookie wall and look a little bit lethargic. Shout out to he who should not be named because we don't glorify terrorists, but he pointed out that he might be still getting over being sick. But Garland finished with 13 points, 4 assists, had a couple of nifty passes and some good plays, but you know, it looks like he's starting to look a little lethargic out there. And then, like you said, Nance off the bench with 22 and 12. That was a nice surprise. But hey, Colin Sexton finished the night with 29 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and on 10 of 15 shooting, 2 of 2 from beyond the arc, 7 of 7 from the free throw line. I tweeted this during the game, but at the time, I think he had 19 points and 0 assists. And I said, normally I would complain about this, but the Cavs are getting absolutely gobsmacked at one point. And I said, Colin being so aggressive like he usually is partially why the Cavs are still in this game. And I think you can say that for the most part, for the better part of this game. If Sexton doesn't come locked in, or if his shot isn't falling like it was, this score would have been a hell of a lot worse than it actually was.
Yeah, I think Colin had the play of the night. He had that dunk on Isaac Bonga. Yeah. That you had a really great tweet that people should just go find talking about it. But like literally the highlight of the night was that dunk. And him just looking so damn vicious on that dunk. And I think you're right. Like, I think, you know, like, there's still little stuff you notice. Like, he had there's just times where, like, you want him to maybe, like, there's a little read you want him to make and stuff. But considering he was the only dude on the team, like, playing with a high – him and Nance are the only two guys on this team that played with a really high level of energy the whole night. Kind of were bringing it every minute on the floor. Didn't look worn. I think Jetty had some really good stuff. Like, he had that really nice chase down block. His shot really just kind of didn't fall. That kind of hinders his night overall. And he has like 9 points on 4 of 11 shooting. But Colin, I mean, like that is what that, if there is something that you can really love about Colin, you can like talk, then, and it's a reason why I think the Cavs fell in love with him in the draft process. And everyone you talk to around him raves about this with him. It's just the guy has just a ridiculous motor and a ridiculous work ethic. And like that, it is like the most cliche sports thing you can say, but that really matters. And I think you're right in saying like that was the only thing for a bit that was really keeping this game tenable for the Cavs, considering he was like the one actually playing with a high level of energy. It was like the inverse of some of the times where like LeBron would play so lethargic, but everyone else was kind of trying around him. This is like the inverse of that. And like, obviously it's not nearly as effective either because Colin Sexton is not LeBron, but that's like the only comp in my head that I could think of.
Just overall, I was kind of sure walking into this game, not heading into it, that the Cavs might have made it interesting, and they did for a little bit, but then it was a game of runs for a little bit, then Washington kind of pulled away, and then, yeah, no, Colin kept it competitive, and it was nice overall, and I'll take it. I guess if you had to find a silver lining from this, Colin Sexton had a good night. But I texted you during the game because you and I both agree that this is just like a weird one to watch overall, and there's not a lot of analysis to talk about two bad teams playing each other and the worst of the two teams, record-wise at least, lost. So here's my question for you, Chris. Who do you think is less happy in their current situation, Kevin Love or Bradley Beal?
Kevin Love.
Okay, well, you just...
There is no hesitation same answer. About this. Because Bradley Beal, I think there's you read a lot of, I mean, even though I think he's frustrated by this year, I think there's stuff where like the reporting on him is that he is kind of more of like a loyal dude. Not that that Kevin is not, but I think Beal's sort of like kind of committed to that, and like, you know, I think different circumstances, and Kevin is like, I mean, you know, he freaking watched the Joker again the other day, which is just hilarious that he like made it know that he watched the Joker again. Shots to Kevin. Would also love to know if he actually thinks that's a good movie, because that's not a good movie. It's fine. Come at me, incels. But yeah, I think it's Bradley Beal would be happier.
Yeah, I'd agree. Probably,
like, and he's gonna get like, I don't know if he thinks of John Wall, but like he'll get John Wall back, and like they have like other stuff, and like. The Wizards have won 15 games this year. They're, you know, they're still a lottery team, but the Cavs are like they're inching into that Atlanta Golden State territory. Like, the Cavs have the same record as the Knicks right now, which is just absolutely hilarious when you think about it.
God, that's just pathetic. But no, I was gonna say Bradley Beal is the happier of the two, just because, but for different reasons. If Beal does get fed up with the situation in Washington, because there are, like, you know, times where he seems like he's displeased, but like you said, he seems loyal and committed to seeing this through and maybe hoping for the best with John Wall coming back, and maybe John Wall, with the power of modern medicine, doesn't let this injury completely set back his overall play style and everything. But we'll have to see what happens. But my notes, I literally wrote one sentence that says, Beal knows he's more likely to be moved if Washington were to make him available, because his contract's a lot more palatable. He's young. He's arguably one of the top shooting guards in the league. And I feel like there's a lot of teams who would be lining up if Bradley Beal made it known to the Wizards that, like, hey, this isn't working, you need to get rid of me. And again, Washington could flip him for quite a few nice assets and slowly but surely rebuild through the draft. But I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I think that would have to be next year, I think, just based on the contract. But yeah, you're right. Let me ask you a question about this.
Sure.
Is there any the last five games for Garland, look at his shooting numbers, they're not good. Any concern about it? Like, do you consider that anything more than like a normal rookie kind of wall thing, or is there any other larger concerns you would have there?
I think it's more so him hitting a rookie wall. And something that I've kind of stressed for a while now, with him more or less being a high school player with five minimal college games experience, transitioning to the NBA, like, it's about the right time for him to hit this rookie wall, but maybe it's going to hit him a little harder just because he is still trying to probably get in complete shape, and he's undersized, and he's still adjusting to playing with grown-ass men on this floor. But like you said, he's not shooting well. Actually, in the month of January, he's shooting 39.6% from the floor, 32.9% from three. His free throw percentage is solid, and overall is averaging 15.3 points to go with, 5.7 assists. But no, he's in a bit of a slump right now. Like, tonight against Washington, he finished 4 of 17. The other night against the Knicks, he finished 4 of 20 from the floor. And, I mean, him and Sexton both were brutal that night, but Chicago was a little better at 6-14. Memphis wasn't bad at 4-12. Well, Memphis was pretty bad at 4-12. And then you just keep going down the list. Like, the Lakers game, he shot above 50%. The Denver game, he did shoot 50%. And then it's just a lot of up and down. And I'm interested to see, with Chicago coming into town on Saturday, and maybe, just maybe, since Chicago is not that great of a team either, he can get out of the slump. Because I had my concerns early in the season about Colin Sexton, and I had my concerns about last season about Colin Sexton not really letting his shot fall, and eventually that turned around. He's done it twice now, so I have optimism that the Cavs coaching staff can set Darius in a position for success. But just to answer your question, because I'm getting long-winded here, no, yeah, I just think he's hitting a rookie wall at this point. And maybe this All-Star break can't come soon enough just so he can get some proper time off.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think All-Star break and us getting there and getting through, I think, like, we're, you know, exactly like 2 weeks from the trade deadline now or something like that.
2 weeks. You know,
so we'll have obviously be talking about that a lot on the show. But I think once you get past that, once you get through the All-Star break, I imagine things will just feel a little bit more normal. Like, you know, it might not be the most like clean thing in the world, but I think we'll be there. No. I also want to say, like, the one thing about this game that I did think was cool was Garland and Beal, and then maybe, I don't know if they're like what their connection is, I guess, and Tyler Cook as well, but they exchanged jerseys with Beal. I love that. That's just become an NBA thing. It's a big thing in soccer, way before it was a thing in the NBA. So I think it's cool. And looking at the Cavs Twitter, kind of looks like they all like signed the jerseys for each other, but Garland got Beal's jersey, and I think that's a dope thing.
I've actually just pulled up an article by Fred Katz, The Athletic, and Garland in the opening quote said that Beal is, quote, like his big brother, and he talks to him all the time, and he talks to Beal's son and his wife, and he's like, I know them like they're my family. So I'm just going to keep scrolling down
through this. There's Garland. Time to recruit Darius. Let's go.
Yeah. He's a clutch client. He's got to learn from the actual man who runs the operation there. So it's time for him to start recruiting. I don't know. There's not much left. Actually, I have a fun game for you. This is my other question. John Michael noted that when Isaiah Thomas and Jordan McRae are on the floor, that they were both former Cavaliers. And I went through every NBA roster with active players on it. And well, there's one tactical player on here. Actually, not active because one of them's hurt. But do you know off the top of your head which team in the NBA has the most former Cavaliers on their roster?
Oh, that's a really good question.
I was actually surprised by this answer.
Okay. I'm trying to think because it could be really random. It could be like there's obviously a lot of guys that have retired, guys that have left out of the league considering like the turnover. Is it the Jazz?
It is not. The Jazz are tied for third with the Blazers, the Knicks, technically the Timberwolves, if you consider Andrew Wiggins, the Miami Heat, the Indiana Pacers.
He has a jersey. Justin's a sucker and bought a jersey, so it counts.
I did too, but the Cavs refunded me. But other than that, I have the Pacers, and they joined the Pacers and the Pistons with one former Cavalier. It's actually the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, and Timothy Lou Cabarro. And then after that, at two.
They had Nwaba earlier this year.
Yeah, they did have Nwaba. So I guess if you really want to get technical, they've had four Cavaliers on their roster and Shumpert. So make that five. So Brooklyn's just walking away with this one. But then after that,
that seems obvious now that you've said it.
Yeah, no, that's what, like, when I was looking at it, I'm like, you know, that makes a lot of sense, but I, like, always joke around, like, there's a lot of former Cavaliers in the NBA, and on right now there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, so 50% of the, 50% of the league has a former Cavalier on their roster, and as you guys can tell, I really was paying attention closely in the second quarter of this Cavs-Wizards game.
This is a good use of your time, I think.
No, it was just something I was curious about because I've always joked about it. But no, it's just to round things out, it's Golden State, the Lakers, the Bucks, and the Wizards all have two former Cavaliers on their rosters. And then, like I said, there's 15 teams who don't have a single former Cavalier on the roster. But hey, with the trade deadline right around the corner, that's probably going to change. Slowly but surely, everyone will be a Cavalier. So I think that's a good place for us to stop. Coming up next, I sat down with draft guru Trevor Magnotti, and he gave a lot of insight on who the Cavs should look out for in this upcoming draft class. Just a quick spoiler, he is not high on James Wiseman at all. And he also, I called him out a little bit and talked to him about his evaluations on at least Darius Garland and Kevin Porter and how he feels on them now. I'm actually, you know, he was pretty honest about one of them at least. So look forward to that. We'll be right back with more Locked On Cavaliers.
Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get into action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy, or gal, who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So, if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag, because no one gives you more ways to win. Are you tired of watching games from the couch with nothing to gain? MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Hey guys, this is Evan today, and I'm joined by draft expert Trevor Magnotti. You can find his work covering the draft of the Step Back, and he and I work together at Fear the Sword. Trevor, how's it going today, man?
Going good. I think this is my first time with the other half of Locked On Cavs, so I'm excited to talk with you about the draft here.
No, definitely. Actually, it's a good segue there. As Because I've mentioned plenty of times before on the show, you're one of my go-to guys. You and Jackson Frank especially are when it comes to all things NBA draft. And I remember last summer when the Cavs were kind of locked in on a few players, I probably wasn't the last person bugging you for your opinion. But after our conversations, I felt a lot more reassured on who the Cavs should and shouldn't be targeting. But yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I feel like, you know, they – more it's really weird because last year we had a pretty good idea of who they were going to take if you kind of listened to the reports and mm-hmm. Scuttle that was coming from the team. And this year is kind of different because we have no idea. Like I don't think I've gotten any real feeling on where they're leaning, what they're looking at, who they're targeting in the draft so far. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Just kind of given what we've known previously from them.
No, absolutely. And I guess for this first segment, we're going to touch base on last year's draft class. And just to give everyone a quick recap, Cleveland ended up with Darius Garland at 5th overall, Dylan Windler at 26, and Kevin Porter in 30th after a trade with Detroit. And, you know, we've only seen Garland and Porter this season in action. And Trevor, I guess I just wanted to pick your brain after like comparing to what you said on your final big board for the step back. What your stance is on at least Garland and Porter compared to last summer. And to start things off, we can talk about Darius Garland, who you had number 11 overall on your big board. But just to give a quick rundown, you shared that he had the potential to be the best pure scorer in the draft class, but you had some concerns about his vision and ability to finish. And I guess my question for you is, have your thoughts changed on Garland much, or do you more or less still feel the same about him at this point in the season?
I think I feel the same about him as a scorer. I think that he has really come on as a shooter throughout the season, which I kind of expected, that once he kind of got comfortable with the speed of the game, that his shooting was going to be the first thing that really started to come around and establish itself to where it ultimately is going to end up being. I mean, that was his go-to thing at Vanderbilt, was his go-to thing in high school. His ability to get to his pull-up jumper and use his dribble and use his momentum to be able to create separation from defenders and be able to pull up from outside beyond the three-point arc was one of the strongest things about him at the college level. And I think that has pretty much looked the same. You know, I still have the issues with him finishing at the rim. Obviously, he's only hitting 50% from inside 3 feet this season, only taking 18% of his shots there. Those are things that are definitely going to have to change if he is going to be the primary driver of a good offense. You have to be able to get to the rim and finish at a high level as a lead guard to be a very effective one in the NBA. So that, I think, you know, I kind of thought that was where he was going to struggle, and so far that has been where his struggle has been this season. But overall, his scoring package is starting to kind of display itself with the propensity to take those pull-up threes more, the comfort off ball. I think that everything's kind of clicking there. The one thing that surprised me this season is actually I thought his passing so far has been a lot better than what I expected. You know, at Vanderbilt, he mm-hmm. was not much of a passer, got some tunnel vision at times, but I think that was just because Vanderbilt was a very bad team last year. We saw that from their performance without Garland in the lineup. And I think that this year you're seeing that he has a lot better vision than kind of what we were expecting. And he is able to make a lot more of the passes than he was able to show at the college level. And I think that when his passing ability comes around to where his court vision is, he is going to be a guy who's probably going to average, you know, 5, 6, 7 assists per game pretty comfortably at his peak. And I think that if you combine that with the outside shooting, with potentially some growth as a rim finisher, you know, I see him as a very good point guard in this league. I think he's well on his way to that. So I think that he's, you know, he's improved in my opinion, in my opinion of him from where I started the season, where I finished up prior to the draft with him. I did not expect that playmaking to be as good as it is. And with that, it just adds an added dimension to his game.
I guess my question is, players you had ahead of him before we touch on Kevin Porter, you had Bol Bol, Jackson Hayes, Grant Williams, DeAndre Hunter, and then obviously Ja Morant, who's been by and far the best rookie in this draft class just because of the luxury of Zion not playing and making his debut last night. Do you think that Garland would be a little bit higher on your list if you had the power of hindsight when filling out this final draft board?
Yeah, I think so. I think knowing that he is a little bit better passer, I would have probably put him up with Garland and Kobe White, who I had in my top five, all because the big thing that separated those two guys from Garland was that they were such good advanced playmakers. And, you know, I had my reservations about Ja Morant, and so far, you know, he's kind of proven that wrong a little bit. But I think that he and Garland would have probably ended up being on the same level had we seen this type of playmaking ability and kind of what my projections for them were coming into the draft. If I had known that he was going to be kind of on par with how White is as a playmaker, I probably would have been a lot higher on him and probably would have had him leapfrog to probably about like the 6, 7, 8 range instead of at 11 where he finished up.
No, I can absolutely see what you mean, and I think that's a pretty fair and reasonable assessment just based on how this draft class is going. But to jump over to Cleveland's other rookie that has played meaningful minutes this season, currently sidelined with a knee injury, Kevin Porter Jr. you had at number 23 overall on your draft board, which was actually higher than Dylan Windler at 32. But in your evaluation of Porter, you mentioned that he could have the potential to be another Jamal Crawford or Nick Young type player. And personally to me, and based on conversations we had about him leading up to the draft and when Cleveland ended up trading for that 30th overall selection to get him, that threw up a couple red flags. But, you know, this season, Kevin Porter, and I'm sure if you listen to this podcast or if you listen to anyone who covers the Cavs in this medium, we're all pretty high on him. So I'm wondering, Trevor, have you changed how you feel about Porter at all, or are you still not in the hive like the rest of us?
I think that the biggest change for Porter has been, again, something that he didn't really show in college, which was some of the defensive versatility that we've seen. I mean, this guy was kind of on autopilot on the defensive end at USC. And I think a lot of that was contributed to, you know, some of the stuff that as somebody who's not plugged into the situation that he was in, you know, we kind of glossed over the fact that him and the USC coaching staff did not seem to have a very good relationship. And I think that this year he has been a lot more committed on that side of the ball. He is working a lot harder than I think we ever saw him at USC. And he's really putting his physical talents to use. And I think there's an avenue to him being a pretty good defender at the NBA level. So I think that's the biggest difference that I see. Offensively, it's pretty much the same bag that I thought of him in beforehand, where the highs are really high with him. The moments that he has where he looks like the second or third best player on the court are really exciting. And I think that he's showing the shot making ability. He's showing a little bit of the playmaking ability that he had coming into the year. My big reservation is that it's still remained only flashes. And there's nothing really on offense that he does consistently. And I think that is where I want to see him grow, is can he take that leap from being able to do some of these outlandish things that he's able to do at times on the floor and kind of taking over situations? Is he going to be able to make that a more consistent thing? Or is this a guy that you're going to kind of have to lock into playing kind of a max of 21, 22 minutes a game where you can make things all about him and have him maybe lead a bench unit rather than being like a reliable contributor on your starting unit? That's kind of where I think things remain to be seen with him, is can he develop that consistency really on both ends, but especially on offense where he has all these talents to be able to deserve that spot that we kind of have penciled in for him as the team's long-term answer at the two.
Oh, I absolutely get that. I guess just the same question as before, players you had ahead of Kevin Porter on your big board. I think you had Matisse Thybulle ahead of him, who I think I can understand if you want to make a case for him to stay above Porter. But other players include Talen Horton-Tucker, Cam Johnson, Sekou Doumbouya, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Nasir Little, Jontay Porter, who I had to look up to see if he ended up with the team is still a free agent at this point. So do you think that you would rank Porter higher than where you had him at the time of the draft last year, or do you think you feel pretty comfortable with keeping him in that 23 range?
Yeah, I'd probably keep him in the same range just because that's the range where you put the guys that are going to be kind of like your bench contributor types, which is what I think Porter is going to end up being for a good team if he gets in that situation in his career. You know, there are guys obviously that I would push him ahead of Jonte Porter and Talen Horton Tucker not really getting the opportunities to prove themselves in the way that I thought they were because of their draft position. Jonte not getting drafted at all, and then Horton Tucker being a second rounder thought of as more of a project, but really committed to that project status with the Lakers. I still think he's going to end up being good, but certainly not anytime soon while they let him develop. So I would probably push them, you know, ahead a little bit, but you know, there are a couple guys kind of below Porter that I probably would move into kind of the same range. So I would probably keep him around the same. Maybe he ends up at like 20 now instead of like 23. But same range.
No, I understand where you're coming from, and maybe I've been drinking the Kool-Aid a little too hard, and Chris and I just going back and forth about how Kevin Porter's gonna be the next greatest thing. Is maybe talking to you for a little bit is going to give me a little pause again, because I do remember when I asked you, like I said, you said he had that Nick Young vein to him, and I said, okay, well, that's definitely not good. But we will be back in a minute. We're going to take a quick break, and it's just so you can hear from some of our sponsors, and we will be back with some more Locked On Cavs. Stay tuned.
Hey, guys. Evan here. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Cavs is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Cavaliers fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Cavaliers fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right on here, this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
And we're back. Trevor, it's pretty obvious at this point the Cavs are going to be in the draft lottery again this season. And heading into Thursday night, their matchup against the Wizards, the Cavs are currently sitting on fourth best overall odds of selecting first overall. Washington is actually just behind them at fifth. And as I've mentioned, I'm not the best when it comes to draft coverage, and I usually turn to you or other people in your stratosphere when it comes to draft coverage and when it comes to this stuff. So just give me a rundown on who are the three players that Cavs fans should be interested in at this point in the year, and why isn't one of them James Wiseman? Because people get so mad at my mentions when I poo-poo on James Wiseman.
Yeah, I'll start on Wiseman just so we can kind of get this out of the way, because it's probably the number one or number two question that I get is why do I have James Wiseman on the board I just released today at number 28? And I think that the big reason with him is that he has all of the physical tools in the world, but has not shown really any of the functional athleticism or skill play that is going to help him harness those physical tools. The main selling point for Wiseman at this point are that he's a good rebounder, that he is 7'1" with great wingspan, that he is a great play finisher, and that he seems to have pretty good touch from around the basket. Those are not things that are particularly inspiring to me. There are a lot of guys that you can say that about that are in the NBA currently that have good size and are good finishers and are good rebounders at that same position. There's nothing really that separates Wiseman to me from any of the other kind of run-of-the-mill backup big men in the league. You know, he is a good shot blocker, but does not have the defensive awareness or instincts to be able to reliably put that to use in terms of building a good defense around him, in terms of like the quality rim protection stuff that we like to see. He's much more in like the Larry Nance vein, where he's going to block some shots, but you cannot have him as the anchor to your defense because he just does not have the awareness to kind of do the little things that alter shots without using his hands to physically block them. He has bad flexibility on the perimeter, is not able to flip his hips. So if you have a guy that's going to change directions, think of like Chris Paul coming around a pick and roll, who's able to in and out dribble and be able to change directions quickly to be able to get in the lane. Wiseman can't really keep up with that type of guy. And again, the instincts covering the pick and roll as like a drop coverage guy are not very good. So, you know, I don't really see him being a guy that you can actually like have play a meaningful defensive role for you. And if you've got a guy on offense who is kind of just a play finisher because he hasn't really shown any of the shooting or ball handling skills that he was reported to have coming into the year, if that type of guy is not an elite defensive player, then there's really not much value to him being on the floor. So that's why I have him so low, especially factoring in the fact that he's probably going to go in the top five, and that is going to saddle a much larger price tag to him throughout his career just because of the money that he's going to make for the production that you're getting. I just don't see him being a valuable way to spend a top five or top 10 pick.
No, I totally get that. And, you know, this is the same stuff you've been saying to me and a few other people for a while now about why you're not very high on Wiseman and why you and other people in the who cover the draft have legitimate concerns about him. And so maybe I'm just going to start snipping this audio clip and just when people are saying, like, why don't you think the Cavs should take Wiseman? I'm just going to send them that. So you did a perfect job, bud. But I guess just to jump off to that next question, three players in your mind that the Cavs and their fans should be taking into consideration. Like you said, to open this up, you don't really have, I don't even know if we were recording yet, but you mentioned like you don't really have an idea of who Cleveland's really targeting or has an eye on yet. So let's look at you for some insight here, bud. Who do you think the Cavs should be looking at, and who should fans be getting behind at this point in the collegiate and even international season?
Yeah, I think I can give you one player that would be a good option at like a pick number one or pick number two. I'll give you a player that would be a good option at like pick four, pick five, and then like at like pick six or seven. So at the top of the draft, I think that the Cavs' best option is Anthony Edwards of Georgia. I think that he is the most skilled player in the class when it comes to scoring. He is going to be a very impactful scorer in the league, able to probably put up 20 plus points a game at his peak, and he's going to get there pretty easily. This is a guy that I expect to be like, you know, year two, year three, able to be at that point. He is too good of a shot maker, too good of a shot creator for himself to be able to do that. Gets to the rim at will, has a good pull-up game. All of that stuff is really enticing. The big questions with him at this point are, can he do that scoring efficiently? And is he a good enough passer and playmaker to be able to build a good offense around his scoring? Mm-hmm. Is he a guy that's going to play like Dwayne Wade, or is he a guy that's going to play like Devin Booker? Those are kind of the big questions with him. But I think he's a guy that you can pencil in as, you know, you put him into the lineup as the starting shooting guard, pushes Colin Sexton to the bench. You can play all three of Sexton, Garland, and Edwards together because Edwards will probably be big enough to slide up to the three. And I think that there is a lot of good fits with that. Mm-hmm. Move down to maybe the 3, 4, 5 spot. And the guy that I really like and probably my favorite fit for the Cavs, just in terms of pure fit on the roster and kind of the marriage between, you know, X player and Sexton and Garland, is Killian Hayes, who plays in Germany, French player. He has been the guy that has risen up the board, and the guy that the more that I've watched him, the more I've fallen in love with his game. 6'6", can act as a primary ball handler and does so for his European team, and also has some good off-ball capabilities. He's a pretty good spot-up shooter, has some good decision-making, attacking off of advantage situations, kind of like Colin Sexton, where you can swing him the ball off the primary action, you can get his own shot. Very good passer, has probably the best passing technique in the class. And I think that he is a guy that's going to grow into being a primary creator. And also, he's a very locked-in defender, very advanced in terms of his ability to understand positioning and have good awareness and instincts and be able to make complex reads within the defensive system. So sounds perfect for a guy that you want to have as maybe a big primary distributor when you're going to Sexton as the primary scorer in lineups, and then also should be big enough that he can bail out Darius Garland on the defensive end and defend at the point of attack and be able to kind of hide him a little bit better. Works really well with Sexton, I think, on the defensive end too, because he's a good off-ball defender. So I really like the fit of Hayes with those two guys, kind of as like your third guard that maybe gives you the upside of becoming your second guard and pushing Sexton into the third guard role. I think that's really exciting. And then if I look at the sixth or seventh pick, We've talked about him before. If you've followed my stuff, you should know that Isaac Okoro is a guy that I think is going to be a really good draft pick. And I think is a potential generational defensive type prospect in the way that like a Jonathan Isaac was considered, in the way that, like Draymond Green is considered. I think he's going to be that good on defense. Just his mobility along with his raw strength and his instincts, cutting off penetration, delivering help side rim protection, all of that stuff is great for him. Is the offense good enough for him to be able to make that leap? I think so. I think he's going to be a good enough dribbler, and I think he's going to be a good enough finisher that you can play him as maybe like a pick and roll forward and kind of create some fun options there if you put him next to a shooting four, or be able to attack off the dribble in situations and create kind of like Draymond does for the Warriors. Those are the types of things that I expect. So I'm not put off necessarily by his shooting in the way that many people are. I think that he's going to be a perfectly fine fit on the offensive end. He's going to be able to find a path to being valuable there. And then he's the guy that you build as the backbone of your defense. So I think those three are the guys that I would target in each of those three spots that make the most sense for this team moving forward when you're considering their considering fit with the current roster at hand.
No, I absolutely get that. And I think out of all those guys, I'm just thinking the Cavs aren't going to have that same luck that struck them when David Griffin was running the show, or even back when, because I don't think Griffin wasn't GM when Kyrie was first drafted, when they had that hot streak of first overall picks. So you've mentioned Okoro before, and I've read your work on him, and you and I have you've discussed him with people in the Chase Down Discord. Shout out to that wonderful community. But no, Okoro is definitely a guy that's definitely appealing, especially considering that Cleveland will have like a hole at the power forward spot next year, because all things considered, I firmly believe Larry Nance is best utilized coming off the bench for the Cavs. So, no, I think that all three of those guys seem like valid and legitimate options. Killian Hayes, even though he's a point guard, do you think fans would be able to come around on it with the Cavs drafting a third point guard 3 years in a row?
Yeah, I think Hayes is the one guy where you can do that, because he's 6'6 and has demonstrated the ability to play off ball. Yeah, he's probably going to be best as a primary ball handler in certain lineups. But I mean, he's a guy that I think fits a variety of different roles depending on the team that drafts him. Like, you know, you said earlier the Cavs are one spot ahead of Washington. If Washington wanted to pick him as their kind of successor to John Wall, he fits really well there, playing off Bradley Beal as a primary. Or I think he plays really well next to Garland and Sexton as like a two guard. I think that there's a lot of different ways that you can utilize his ability. And just because he has this kind of astronomical assist rate and is playing really well as a point guard in Europe does not mean that he has to be a point guard at the next level. So I think that he's a guy that makes a lot of sense if you're going to add kind of that extra ball handling dynamic to be able to, or to this roster, I think that he's a great guy to be able to use that with.
No, I absolutely get that. And real quick before we wrap things up, Chris, who is still in Florida, actually texted me earlier today and wanted me to specifically ask you to talk him out of Onyeka Okongwu out of Southern California. And I said, you got it, bud. So Trevor, the floor is yours. Talk Chris out of Onyeka Okongwu for us.
I mean, I can't really talk you out of him. He's a perfectly good option. I think that he is a really good center prospect. I am not as bullish as some of the other draft Twitter guys are. I kind of had to corral Jackson Frank as we were putting together our newest big board that's going to be coming out next week. I had to try to convince him to not put Okongwu number one overall, just because I don't think that his player archetype is as valuable as a guy like Edwards or as a guy like LaMelo Ball. But, you know, I think that he's a guy that is going to be a good finisher, is going to be a nice pick and roll lob threat in the NBA, and then is going to be a really, really good defensive prospect. And I think, you know, he works okay next to Tristan Thompson. I think there would be some spacing concerns putting those two guys together. I think that him working with Nance works a little better, but then also the defensive end, I think, isn't a perfect fit. So he's not really a perfect fit with either of the bigs that the Cavs are going to have next to them, assuming that neither of them gets attached to whatever we assume the Kevin Love deal is going to be. But mm-hmm. I think that he's a guy that, you know, is just a good talent at the center position. And the Cavs haven't really had somebody that they could hang their hat on as being like the default, like center of the future, in this rebuild. And I think that this is just going to be I think that if the Cavs picked him, it would not be a bad option at all. And I think that he would be a relatively safe pick because I think it's pretty easy to project what his NBA role is going to be compared to some of these other guys in the same region. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a guy that's dependably going to be a rotation player for your team in 3 years, he's probably the best bet for that. So if that's where you want to go and the Cavs are picking maybe 2-3 and he's there, that's a perfectly reasonable option. I could totally see them going after him as well.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe you didn't talk Chris completely off the ledge as you made him take a couple steps back, which is, I guess, baby steps. So, but Trevor, thanks again for coming on and joining me today. It's always great to have one of the greatest draft minds out there on the, you know, number one Cavs podcast. Could you tell the folks at home where they can find you and your work? And is there anything in particular you want to give a quick plug?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Legal Screens. You can find my writing at Fear the Sword and at The Step Back. I just released my personal top 30 big board earlier today on Fear the Sword, so you can go read that. I try to put a little Cavs slant on everything, but it is kind of how I see the class in general. So keep that in mind as you're reading that. And then our new board at The Step Back, which is me and Jackson Frank with a little bit of input from Ben Pfeiffer, is going to be coming out probably next week. So stay tuned for that as well.
All right, awesome. Thanks again, Trevor, and thanks to everyone for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you all have a good weekend, and Chris and I will be back Monday to recap Cleveland's Saturday tilt with the Bulls and much more. Until next time, go Cavs.